Before the first soldier sets foot on the battlefield. Before the first recon flight takes off. SAIC is there. Helping the Army and Air Force transform opportunities into solutions for diverse missions. From mission command capabilities to enterprise IT systems and modeling, simulation, and training. We work side by side with our customers to develop, field, and sustain critical capabilities for our nation's soldiers and airmen. SAIC, focused on mission success.
Well, that's one of those big Pentagon contractors. Those of us who believe there is UFO information and craft and materials stashed suspect that SAIC would be one of the likely candidates to get that stuff. It's right in the heart of the larger conspiracy lore.
In fact, I think that was the testimony. This is an alien reproduction vehicle. And just to be clear, this means that it is based on advanced anti-gravity and zero-point energy propulsion systems. Those are the propulsion systems. They are being manufactured by a consortium of companies that include Lockheed Martin, Northrop, SAIC, and other corporations.
James Defense Weekly, the popular military and defense publication, published an article about SAIC, and there's a postscript to the article that anyone who believes in the science of anti-gravity to be too arcane, too esoteric, even for the U.S. Air Force, should consider the electric propulsion study undertaken by SAIC for the Astronautics Laboratory, which is now part of the Phillips Lab. The study's primary objective was to outline physical methods to test theories of inductive coupling between electromagnetic and gravitational forces to determine the feasibility of such methods as they apply to space propulsion, and in simplified terms, an anti-gravity propulsion system. It remains for some the ultimate quantum leap.
On this channel, I have discussed numerous DoD contractors and federally funded research and development centers with strong ties and paper trails to UFO crash retrieval and reverse engineering programs. After all, the research conducted by myself and scores of other researchers over the decades have on countless occasions directly accused the U.S. Department of Defense and intelligence community of working in tandem with defense contractors, FFRDCs, and UARCs to reverse engineer exotic technologies of unknown origin, protected by special access and unacknowledged special access programs.
Overall, you know, the government has been the custodian of a lot of this, right? And they'll hand receipt it out to a clear defense contractor to do some analysis, which I find highly unethical. You have basically a sole source arrangement, and you allow certain private corporate elements to look at this, develop a potential insight, and then sell it back to the government for profit. And I think that's totally unethical.
Whether this be Northrop Grumman in Tales of Legacy programs under the Tejon radar site under Antelope Valley, Lockheed Martin and accusations of constructing the TR-3B reverse-engineered alien reproduction vehicle, Battelle Memorial Institute and declassified studies of shape memory alloys possibly originating from the 1947 Roswell, New Mexico crash, or the Aerospace Corporation and MITRE Corporation, both founded between 1959 to 1960, allegedly to exploit technologies of unknown origin. Much of our work on this channel is spent analyzing the private or semi-private sectors. Today, I want to dive back into the corporate world to cover an enormous DoD contractor and defense and technology corporation that I believe may in fact be even more intimately entwined with UFO legacy program operations and security over any other American defense contractor, Science Applications International Corporation. Many viewing this video will recognize SAIC, as we will call it from here on out, as a usual tricky customer of this channel. No longer a piece of lost media, back on 17 July 2024, long before his excellent interview on Jesse Michaels, I relayed the testimony of former U.S. Army Green Beret Randy Anderson and accused SAIC as the contractor running the Off-World Technologies Division beneath the Naval Surface Warfare Center Crane in Indiana. Today, I'm happy to announce I will be re-releasing that investigation, and while I highly recommend viewing that research in its entirety, the first time Randy spoke publicly about his encounter, we will cover his story again today in briefer detail. The trail of SAIC and UFO legacy programs is not as clear-cut and glamorous as any contractor or FFRDC we have covered before on this channel. But by studying SAIC, I strongly believe we gain invaluable insights into UFO legacy program funding, infrastructure, modus operandi, secrecy, and more. So for this investigation, we will break up our research into five main areas of study: black budget monies, legacy program gatekeeping, PSY research, technologies of unknown origin, and material slash craft housing. At the end of this investigation, we should be able to make sense of some interesting questions, such as, what should we make of Dr. Sean Kirkpatrick's former position as senior research scientist for SAIC in 2000 pre-Aero? What can we learn from former SAIC employee Denise McKenzie, who discussed obfuscation of funds on enormous defense contracts? Why has SAIC historically conducted endless advanced propulsion and human psychic research? And does SAIC really run divisions storing non-human artifacts below some of the United States' premier weapon centers? Hey guys, it's UAP Gerb, and I am thrilled for you to join me today as we investigate Washington's shadow, the Pentagon's body shop, Science Applications International Corporation, and their involvement in UFO legacy program operations. Often called the NSA West, I believe SAIC and their decades of cutting-edge, compartmentalized science and technology contracts, as well as intimate ties with senior DOD and intelligence community personnel, highlight a contractor entrenched in UFO legacy programs at the highest level.
SAIC is a bit of a black box. Much of what it does is proprietary or even top secret, so it's hard to tell whether what SAIC provides is necessary and effective.
To understand SAIC and its corporate structure that lends perfectly to an institution entwined with U.S. Department of Defense and intelligence community Deep Sixth Black Budget Special Access Programs, we must first step back and analyze the history of SAIC. Science Applications was born in 1969 from Dr. J. Robert Baister. Baister served in the U.S. Navy during World War II before earning his Ph.D. in nuclear physics in 1950. The doctor's skills were immediately put to work for the Westinghouse Atomic Power Division on the nuclear submarine program. Baister would then join Los Alamos National Labs as a research physicist before joining General Atomics as the chair of the Accelerator Physics Department. Quote, "I was not the brilliant flash of inspiration type of entrepreneur," end quote, Baister would state. Rather, he was more of a quote-unquote persistent builder type. Come 3 February 1969, Baister would start SAIC, immediately stacking the company with General Atomic scientists and created one of the first employee-owned companies.
He made it a priority to ensure that every employee owned a part of the new company, even using employee ownership as a recruitment and retention tool. Staff were expected to perform superior scientific and technical work while also playing a key role in the management and direction of the company.
SAIC's internal stock ownership program, which promised to make government officials rich after they left public service, allowed Baister to immediately pack the payroll with specialists and subject matter experts. But also with generals, diplomats, spies, and cabinet officers, SAIC's board and high-level workforce was, from the company's inception, staffed with high-level military and intelligence personnel with unprecedented access to lucrative contracts and special access programs. Quote, "They had better access to the Pentagon than the government's own attorneys," end quote. Some of these acquisitions included the illustrious Bobby Ray Inman, Navy Admiral, NSA Director, and CIA Deputy Director, John M. Deutsch, Undersecretary of Defense under President Jimmy Carter, and CIA Director under President Bill Clinton, Rear Admiral William F. Rayburn, who headed development of the Polaris submarine program, and many, many, many more personnel. We will address all of these figures and more, such as Dr. Sean Kirkpatrick, in our SAIC Gatekeepers section. Indeed, SAIC's ventures were so successful out of the gate, Baister's very first government contracts came from the Defense Atomic Support Agency, where the company was tasked with calculating the output of nuclear devices. By the mid-2000s, SAIC achieved unrivaled success in government science and technology contracting, specializing, as Vanity Fair once said in 2007, as a quote,
Body Shop in the brain business. It sells human beings who have a particular expertise. Expertise about weapons, about homeland security, about surveillance, about computer systems, about information dominance and information warfare, end quote.
By 2007, SAIC and its two major offices in San Diego, California, and Washington, D.C., ballooned to the size of an entire government agency, featuring a workforce of over 44,000, larger than the manpower of the Departments of Labor, Energy, and Housing and Urban Development combined at that time. Current day, outside of their major offices, SAIC maintains countless locations across the continental United States, many of which are near U.S. military installations or RDT&E facilities, such as the Naval Surface Warfare Center Crane, Indiana, Nellis Air Force Base, Nevada, China Lake Naval Air Station, California, Sandia National Labs, New Mexico, and Crystal City, Virginia. Similar to Northrop Grumman and their acquisition of contractors such as TRW and Teledyne Ryan, and connections to federally funded research and development centers such as the Aerospace Corporation, SAIC exhibits a similar, intriguing history of acquisitions, mergers, associations, etc. One such corporation, allegedly spun from SAIC, is DSAI, Decision Science Applications, Inc., founded in Virginia on 4 January 1977. DSAI operated as an employee-owned, quote, technical services company with expertise in military command and control systems, commercial information management systems, software development, electrical engineering, telecommunications, and physics, end quote. According to some previous whistleblowers, such as the controversial Colonel Steve Wilson, DSAI and SAIC were one in the same, with DSAI featuring a board consisting of the directors of relevant UFO black budget divisions, including IBM, Lockheed, Teledyne Ryan, Aerojet Electrosystems, etc. Wilson would also claim Bobby Ray Inman, a reoccurring figure on this channel and member of the board of directors of SAIC, also ran DSAI. To learn more about Wilson, I do recommend checking out my video on Northrop Grumman and UFO legacy program operations. I will not waste much time here by reviewing his whistleblower claims again. Let's still briefly mention a handful of Wilson's claims and why he is relevant to today's project. Wilson would disclose to Dr. Richard Boylan, a UFO researcher with many publications I approach with skepticism, that he, Wilson, was not only stationed at Area 51-S4, where reverse-engineered anti-gravity vehicles were tested, but that he also spearheaded Project Pounce, an elite Air Force National Reconnaissance Organization Special Forces unit which retrieved downed UFOs with elements of JSOC, specifically Delta Force. Project Pounce can be observed in the disputed Majestic 12 Project Aquarius document and, oddly enough, the 1953 Robertson Panel report. Remember, the Robertson panel served as a debunking panel to reduce public concern regarding UFOs. Wilson would claim the first successful flight of man-made anti-gravity alien reproduction vehicles had occurred on 18 July 1971, which saw Admiral Bobby Ray Inman present for the test. Inman, still at the Navy at this time, would go on to serve as the director of the NSA, deputy director of the CIA, vice director of the DIA, director of Naval Intelligence, and board member of SAIC in the 1980s. Wilson's disclosures are indeed intriguing, but should, of course, be taken with some skepticism. Therefore, I do recommend also reading a more skeptical take on Wilson written by Kevin Randall. But relevant to our discussion is Wilson's map of Star Wars City, an illustration depicting UFO legacy program operations conducted covertly within the Strategic Defense Initiative, also known as SDI, created in 1983 under President Ronald Reagan. This SDI program will be discussed again in our project in much greater detail, so please hang tight. Within this chart are numerous institutions one might expect to be associated with UFO retrieval and exploitation programs: the NRO, the National Security Council, the National Security Agency, CIA, NORAD, and Majestic 12. Adhering to the SDI Colorado HQ and Magi, there exists a list of contractors alleged to engage with the UFO portfolio. Alongside the 1010 Special Security Squadron, which, quote, provides a high level of protection to NORAD, U.S. Spacecom, and AF Spacecom resources located at the mountain, end quote, contractors such as Rockwell, Martin Marietta, Lockheed, Boeing, McDonnell Douglas, and IBM are mentioned. Wilson would state one contractor paramount to the SDI UFO programs was Decision Science Applications, Inc. But here is where things get really interesting. We don't have concrete evidence DSAI was spawned from SAIC, though it is likely. However, we can analyze the evolution of DSAI, and I would like to thank Reddit user StillChillTrill for this incredible work. His account is now deleted, but I will still link to his excellent posts. In 1998, DSAI executed a merger into a company called DSA Acquisitions, Inc., that was then purchased by Stephen Myers and Associates for almost $31 million in cash and stock. By 21 August of that year, Stephen Myers and Associates finalized their acquisition of DSAI/DSA. Stephen Myers and Associates eventually acquired Emergent Information Technologies, Inc., and SMNA changed its name to Emergent Information Technologies. On 6 December 2001, Emergent Information Technologies sold its Virginia-based government services group to L3 Communications. L3 Harris, formerly known as L3 Communications, is another defense contractor that has both worked alongside SAIC for enormous defense contracts and is a contractor I have been informed works directly in UFO legacy program operations. But to fully complete this circle, in July of 2012, a part of L3 Communications, aka L3 Harris, spun off into its own publicly traded company called Angility. In 2018, SAIC purchased Angility for $2.5 billion. So regardless of if DSAI was spawned from SAIC, eventually DSAI assets made their way to SAIC and another defense contractor highly likely involved in UFO legacy operations, L3 Harris. But if that wasn't already difficult enough to track, incredibly convoluted corporate structures are commonplace with SAIC. On 27 September 2013, SAIC created a $4 billion spinoff, retaining the name SAIC while transforming its name to Leidos. The primary reason for this spinoff was, quote, conflicts of interest provisions in the Federal Acquisition Regulation, which prevented the company from bidding on some new contracts because of existing contracts, end quote. So essentially, SAIC had so many contracts and was so big, it had to split up to gain more. So just to point out, when I refer to SAIC, I am referring to both SAIC and Leidos, but this gets even more interesting. On 16 August 2016, Leidos merged with Lockheed Martin Information Systems and Global Solutions that saw Leidos acquire this Lockheed division for $5 billion. And in an additional interesting event, on 30 November 2017, Lockheed Martin Services, Inc. changed their name to Leidos Government Services, Inc. After the creation of Leidos, SAIC announced acquisition of Skeetor Holdings, a defense and space manufacturing contractor with specific expertise in intelligence, for $790 million. This purchase was completed in an all-cash transaction and retained the majority of original Skeetor employees. According to a 2008 book, Spies for Intelligence, by Tim Shorrock, Skeetor was a critical contractor for the CIA's Directorate of Science and Technology for Satellite Signals Intelligence and Electronic Intelligence. The CIA Directorate of Science and Technology, or DS&T, is a commonplace subject on this channel, serving as a legacy UFO program office that in 2002 spawned the CIA Office of Global Access. Excellent journalist Chris Sharp, myself, and others have accused the Office of Global Access, or OGA, as participating in foreign UFO crash retrieval operations. I have additionally, when discussing U.S. Navy UFO foreign material acquisition and exploitation programs, discussed the CIA DS&T alongside the NRO, NURO, SOCOM, Department of Energy, and more, operating worldwide undersea UFO retrieval operations. I have quite a few projects to learn more about the CIA DS&T, so go check out any of these projects in the video description. Perhaps SAIC took note of Skeetor for their expertise in MASINT, or Measurement and Signals Intelligence, a highly classified form of intelligence, quote, that uses infrared heat imaging, acoustic signatures, seismic data, and other information picked up by air and ground sensors to sniff out for weapons tests and other activities that other countries want to hide from the United States, end quote. MASINT collection is primarily managed by the DIA and used extensively by the CIA. In 2005, Skeetor held a national symposium on MASINT signature technology with contractors involved such as BAE Systems and, of course, SAIC. After all, according to Spies for Hire, quote, Skeetor may be unknown, but it is definitely not a small player, end quote. Also consider me curious and possibly suspicious that Skeetor's old building in Chantilly, Virginia, 14660 Lee Road to be specific, resides in the same corporate park with SAIC, the Aerospace Corporation, and FFRDC I have accused directly as having decades of UFO program involvement, and the NRO. SAIC's acquisitions and partnerships are indeed indicative of a contractor entwined with UFO legacy program operations. Later in this project, we will explore this even further, such as SAIC's relationship with EG&G, the contractor Bob Lazar claimed hired him to reverse engineer UFO propulsion systems at Area 51-S4. Equally intriguing as SAIC's acquisitions are the corporation's intimate ties with U.S. intelligence and knack for war profiteering. From its inception, SAIC enjoyed high-level former intelligence officials on its board, but I would also like to reference a 2018 Baltimore Sun article titled, Little Known Contractor Has Close Ties with Staff of NSA. This article, along with the excellent book The Shadow Factory by James Bamford, detail how SAIC basically became quote-unquote NSA West, a revolving door between the NSA and SAIC. Interesting here, as the National Security Agency, or NSA, is one of the U.S.'s big five intelligence agencies alongside the NRO, CIA, DIA, NGA, NRO, and likely the Hidden Neuro. In numerous programs, I have implicated the NSA in UFO legacy program operations, from enforcing gatekeeping in the form of TREAT, or the Tactical Reconnaissance Engineering Assessment Team, to management of ARV programs such as the TR-3B. As a side note, an unnamed retired Army Public Affairs Officer friend of mine who brushed up against legacy programs told me he was not frightened by the CIA, but was terrified of the behemoth that was the NSA. And later on, we will discuss possible avenues of black budget monies conducted between SAIC and the NSA, so hold tight. Keep in mind during our investigation that SAIC is an eligible contractor under the DoD's Corporate Portfolio Program. The Corporate Portfolio Program gives defense industrial-based corporations like SAIC access to DoD executives, scientists, and management with broad access to special access programs. The Corporate Portfolio Program framework was established in 2020 under then U.S. Undersecretary for Defense for Acquisition and Sustainment, Ellen Lord. In an almost comical sequence of events, Lord would join SAIC's advisory board in July 2021. And as we progress in this investigation, I find it prudent to mention SAIC is accustomed to getting their way however and whenever they want. Whether this be in the form of acquisitions, enormous sole source contracts, or war profiteering efforts. Many viewers on this channel are familiar with the cries of weapons of mass destruction that fueled the logic behind the Iraq War. Now, did you know, SAIC executives were involved at every stage of the Iraq War lifecycle? Indeed, quote,
SAIC personnel were instrumental in pressing the case that weapons of mass destruction existed in Iraq in the first place, and that the war was the only way to get rid of them. And when no weapons of mass destruction were found, SAIC personnel staffed the commission that was set up to investigate how American intelligence could have been so disastrously wrong, end quote.
Just to provide some further context here, in 1998, David Key, weapons expert and director of SAIC's Center for Counterterrorism Technology and Analyses, testified before the Senate Armed Services Committee, Saddam Hussein, quote, remains in power with weapons of mass destruction, end quote. Following the Iraq War, President Bush appointed a commission to analyze how American intelligence managed to, quote, miss the truth about Iraq's weapons programs, end quote. The commission published a report just 1 year later, absolving policymakers and U.S. intelligence from distorting evidence of Iraq's WMDs. The commission had direct ties to SAIC, including Gordon Uhler, SAIC VP for Corporate Development, Jeffrey R. Cooper, VP for Technology and Chief Science Officer of one of SAIC's major subunits, and Samuel S. Vissner, SAIC VP and Director of Strategic Planning and Business Development for SAIC's Intelligence Group. And now that we have finally set the stage for SAIC and UFO legacy programs, let's begin to dive in.
You can say categorically you've seen no convincing, confirmable evidence of intact spacecraft kept by the U.S. government?
No. I have seen nothing that leads me to that conclusion.
Is it possible there is some secret program that you're just not aware of?
I don't think so. I have access to anything and everything I need.
And the way you combat conspiracy theories and the associated misunderstandings that fuel them is with fact and science and truth. So if you've got evidence for a conspiracy, then that helps to investigate what the underlying truth is. There has been none that has been substantiated for this. And everything that has been brought to our attention and everything that was brought to my attention when I was in that position as the director, we investigated and discovered that it did not come from where they thought it came from. Most everything was explainable through other documentation, other programs, other people that had talked to other people.
Washington Shadow, NSA West, whatever you want to call it, SAIC has served as a revolving door for high-level U.S. Department of Defense personnel. Since the company's inception, SAIC was aggressively packed with, quote, former generals, admirals, diplomats, spies, and cabinet officers of every kind to fill the company's board of directors and the upper echelons of its staff, end quote. With such high-level staff, it is no surprise there are numerous accused high-level gatekeepers to UFO legacy programs with aggressive and shocking ties to SAIC. Let's reflect on Dr. Sean Kirkpatrick, former head of the Pentagon's All-Domain Anomaly Resolution Office. I certainly hold no love for Kirkpatrick, and I wager many viewers of this channel share the same sentiment.
When I was in USDI, I read the transcripts of Sean Kirkpatrick briefing Senator Rubio, Senator Warren, and Senator Gillibrand on the results of his investigation in his congressionally tasked Arrow report. Mm-hmm. And those transcripts, which were supposed to be open kimono, here's the truth, Mr. Senator, Mrs. Senator, Sean Kirkpatrick absolutely distorted, downplayed, and can't prove it, but I would say outright lied to the people who have direct responsibility for him.
Saying what? What did he say that was a lie?
So it's more of a lie of the whole
big picture.
The big picture, right? Mm-hmm. In the meeting, it's, you know, oh, we, you know, Congressman Rubio, you know, we've heard about this incident. We just don't have enough data to go on it to really know what this is. We don't have any way of really figuring out what's going on. It could just be an anomaly. In fact, it's most likely anomaly. So starting with an acknowledgement that, you know, here you, oh yeah, you have some data, but we have the insight and the scientific expertise to make you feel at ease.
Nothing to see here, folks. Move along.
Exactly. Although there was also political discussion involved and historic discussion. And, you know, I read these transcripts once, and immediately knew that,
veiled threat?
No, I knew that I was now something else. I had inside knowledge into the deception of our government by elements of our intelligence community.
Under Kirkpatrick, Arrow released the abysmal Arrow Historical Report Volume 1, which outright lied about some witness testimony. This was proven, for example, by Michael Herrera's official Arrow Memorandum for Record, which showed Herrera did not claim to encounter an extraterrestrial spaceship or U.S. Special Forces as falsely outlined in the Arrow report. Arrow, under the direction of Dr. Kirkpatrick, additionally, in 2022, engaged in DoD contracts with contractor SandCorp, a company with a specialty in plugging whistleblower leaks. I have also in the past shown ties with Kirkpatrick and his good buddy Ronald Moultrie, former Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence and Security and board member of both Battelle Memorial Institute and the MITRE Corporation, and how Kirkpatrick and Moultrie enjoyed debunking claims of UFOs at previous Arrow roundtables.
The guy that formed Arrow, upon whose recommendation Arrow was formed, is a guy named Ed Moultrie, who is Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence, and he was on Battelle's board, and he scrubbed that from his LinkedIn. And my good friend UAP Gerb, who has an amazing channel, he's a super deep UFO researcher, showed that it was on his resume, and then he recommends that Arrow forms. It's like the total conflict of interest. It's insane. It's insane.
Kirkpatrick, during his time at Arrow and post-Arrow, has frequently engaged in dismissing any and all whistleblower claims, often resorting to emotionally charged outbursts.
You believe them. I believe that they believe what they're telling me, and my job is not to, it's not a question of belief, right? It's a question of what can I go research.
There is absolutely nothing that I'm going to do, say, or produce evidentiary that is going to make the true believers convert, if you will. I mean, it's almost like a religion. It is basically a religion.
Myself and others have wagered Kirkpatrick served and possibly still serves as a gatekeeper for UFO legacy programs. This sentiment was shared by witness Ed of the 412th Test Wing, who refused to testify to Arrow under Kirkpatrick, as according to Ed, Kirkpatrick is an insider meant to squash information. The doctor's employment history, pre and post Arrow, is additionally intriguing. The good doctor has filed many patents, including 2022 and 2023. 23 patents for, quote, system and methods for determining influence of channels in a social network, end quote. But that is not our interest today. No, instead, it is Sean Kirkpatrick's former patents with SAIC, including a 2003 filing for, quote, holographic recording and micro/nanofabrication via ultra-fast holographic 2-photon-induced photopolymerization, HTPIP, end quote. Between joining the NRO and CIA in 2003 and 2005 respectively, and working within the Air Force Research Laboratory in 1997, Kirkpatrick worked at SAIC as a senior research scientist. We can specifically review work for SAIC as a senior research scientist in the year 2000. Now, how interesting is that? A senior SAIC scientist went on to spearhead a questionable office in Arrow that was originally supposed to be called the UAP-JPO, which some have called Project Blue Book 2.0. Now, flash back to 1987. SAIC had previously conducted some of Sean Kirkpatrick's favorite type of science for the DOE, aspects of turbulence in nonlinear solutions. Shortly after leaving both the Pentagon and Arrow, Kirkpatrick began his own LLC called Nonlinear Solutions. As of 1 January 2025, Nonlinear Solutions has been subcontracted by the MITRE Corporation, an FFRDC I have spoken about ad nauseum on this channel, for DoD indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity contracts for U.S. Spacecom. The description of this MITRE contract reads, quote, award of indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity contract for National Security Engineering Center, Federally Funded Research and Development Center, FFRDC, end quote. The NSEC run by MITRE in McLean, Virginia, operates to, quote, provide the U.S. and its allies and partners with the ability to anticipate and solve the most consequential national security problems requiring integration across missions, capabilities, organizations, and nations, end quote. I do wonder what sort of support Nonlinear Solutions can offer as a subcontractor for MITRE under U.S. Spacecom here. But Kirkpatrick did have previous experience with Spacecom, serving as the intelligence community lead for a U.S. Spacecom task force in 2018 to 2019. Now, I mention that to recall back to September 2024, when excellent researcher Tag_OM recovered FOIA documents from U.S. Spacecom dated 31 January 2023. These documents outlined a briefing conducted by Kirkpatrick to high-level DoD attendees on, quote, UAP response and recovery and material transfer, end quote. I do sure wonder what Nonlinear Solutions and MITRE plan to do with U.S. Spacecom. In December 2023, Kirkpatrick also joined Oak Ridge National Laboratory as the Chief Technology Officer for Defense and Intelligence Programs. Oak Ridge is, of course, a DOE-sponsored FFRDC administered by Battelle Memorial Institute. These are patterns we simply cannot ignore. Why is a former SAIC senior research scientist so intimately involved with FFRDCs and UARC institutions? I commonly connect to UFO programs after his tenure as the DoD's mouthpiece to debunk UFO information with Aero. Let us now transition to the most legendary testimony of gatekeeping UFO legacy programs in history, the Wilson-Davis memo. Now, in this video, in the interest of time, I will assume the viewer has some knowledge of the Wilson-Davis meeting notes. So if you don't, go check out my first ever video on this channel. It's a little rough, but still gets the message across. In short, these disputed but highly likely accurate notes transcribed by Dr. Eric Davis leaked from the estate of the late astronaut Edgar Mitchell. These notes recount a 2002 conversation between Davis and Vice Admiral and former DIA Director Thomas Wilson outside of the parking lot of contractor EG&G in Nevada. The conversation recounts Wilson finding but being stonewalled in accessing UFO recovery and material exploitation programs. Protected by the DoD Special Access Program Oversight Committee, SAPOC, Senior Review Group, SRG, and a large defense contractor, I wager, might in fact be SAIC. According to Wilson, he was informed by General Michael Ward to search a special records group in the Office of the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition and Technology, belonging to special legacy holdover programs from before Special Access Program restructuring efforts in the early 1990s. In the memo, UFO programs were reorganized under SAPOC SRG after an internal audit almost revealed the programs. This SAPOC reorganization began on 5 January 1994, when the Deputy Secretary of Defense significantly enhanced and strengthened changes in the DoD Special Access Program SAP management and control structure. This newsletter on screen now highlights those changes, establishing the Senior Review Group. We can also possibly find some useful data in the GAO's May 1993 report titled, quote, DoD Special Access Programs Administrative Due Process Not Provided When Access is Denied or Revoked, end quote, which discusses the Navy and Air Force not complying with DoD Regulation 6200.2/R, which discussed Special Access Program access. I did find it interesting that between the Army, Air Force, and Navy, it was in fact the Army that did comply in some cases for SAP regulations according to this GAO document. And according to some of my research, this makes sense to me as well, as I am familiar with cases in which the U.S. Army seemed to operate UFO material exploitation programs in a strict controlled environment with oversight, while Navy and Air Force legacy programs seemed to operate far more loosely and out of control. But let's take a deeper look at the SAPOC and its senior review group that was, upon its creation by the Deputy Secretary of Defense, tasked with gatekeeping UFO legacy programs, according to VADM Wilson. Around the time of this restructuring, the SAPOC was chaired by Deputy Secretary of Defense, the Honorable John Deutsch. Mind you, John Deutsch did not restructure SAPOC as DEP-SECDEF. This was conducted by his predecessor, William Perry, but Deutsch immediately followed suit in the role. Immediately pre his position chairing SAPOC as the Deputy Secretary of Defense, Deutsch served as the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition and Technology, the same office Wilson learned contained UFO legacy files. Now, Deutsch here is very interesting. Based upon the testimony of VADM Wilson, we can conclude with a high degree of certainty Deutsch served as a gatekeeper for UFO legacy programs. Deutsch served as a director of Central Intelligence, a professor at MIT, enjoyed numerous positions within the DOE, and also served as a consultant pre-work on SAPOC with TRW, Los Alamos National Labs, and MITRE, three institutions I directly accuse of being involved in UFO programs. But that's not all. Pre-1995, possibly during his tenure as DEP-SECDEF and within the AUSTAT, Deutsch served as the director of SAIC, and even worked in SAIC's La Jolla office, the same office of Denise McKenzie. So here's what we're left with. According to Wilson, the reorganization of SAPOC and creation of the Senior Review Group directly served to gatekeep UFO legacy programs from even a three-star admiral and DIA director. DepSecDef William J. Perry conducted such a reorganization in February of 1994, and immediately 1 month after, a new DepSecDef is assigned and put in charge as chairman of SAPOC, this being a former SAIC director. But that's not all. To put the real cherry on top here, even William J. Perry himself, who reorganized SAPOC in 1994, once served on the board of SAIC. One could be chance, two is a pattern, so let's extend this further. During his investigations, Vice Admiral Wilson spoke to two permanent members of the Special Access Program Oversight Committee, Brigadier General Mike Kostinick and Paul Kaminsky, the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition and Technology, preceded by Deutsch. Kaminsky and permanent Senior Review Group member Lynn Wells are both lifelong MITRE Corporation members, but I digress. A permanent SAPOC member post-SAP restructuring is Admiral William A. Owens, former Vice Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Outside of his prestigious naval career and service as Senior Military Assistant to Dick Cheney, Owens additionally served as the CEO for SAIC. All in all, the SAPOC, which was restructured in the early 1990s to serve as a gatekeeping structure for UFO legacy programs, according to Wilson, saw two of six personnel as former SAIC alumni. This is why, I wager, the contractor Wilson accused as operating alongside the SAPOC SRG for UFO secrecy is in fact SAIC. And let's not forget a critical third man mentioned in the Wilson Davis notes, Naval Reserve Commander Willard Miller. Miller attended the 1997 meeting with VADM Wilson and Stephen Greer. And yes, this meeting did take place. This is a fact. During this meeting in the EG&G parking lot between Davis and Wilson, Davis flashed a 2002 letter addressed to him from Commander Miller. Within the letter, Miller offered to aid Davis and physicist Hal Puthoff in their UFO crash retrieval research. Miller requested anonymity, clearly this wasn't honored, but offered to connect the men to multiple high-value targets and information, including a senior official with knowledge on alien reproduction vehicles, a list of civilian DoD contractors involved in UFO crash retrieval and material exploitation programs, and a team possibly involved with UFO crash retrievals. Where did Miller get this intel? Was it firsthand experience, exposure to programs, or connections in the corporate world? Because Miller did, after all, work as a, quote, senior analyst in future counter-threat planning, directed energy weapons, space systems, and Navy space wargaming, end quote, for SAIC. Indeed, in a 2000 book called Swamp Gas Times, My 2 Decades on the UFO Beat by Patrick Hugh, emails between Commander Miller and attorney Peter Gersten are detailed. Miller believed, quote,
senior government officials, such as the director of the DIA, with whom I met with recently on the subject, are protected and isolated from knowledge of this subject and from data gathered by their own Department of Defense intelligence organizations. The military leadership has both interest in and concern about the UFO phenomenon. If there are any keepers of the keys, they reside in DoD middle management and civilian DoD contractors, BDM, SAIC, Boeing, Lockheed, and the comptrollers who monitor the flow of money to certain classified and special access programs, end quote.
Outside of the Wilson-Davis notes, there are numerous possible high-level SAIC personnel serving as gatekeepers for UFO programs. Discussed already today and in my previous work, we have the U.S. Admiral, Director of the NSA, Deputy Director of the CIA, Director of Neuro, Vice Director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, and Chairman of SAIC, Bobby Ray Inman, who went from in 1989 discussing recovered UFOs becoming available for technological research with NASA mission specialist Bob Eschler to saying he found plausible answers for all UFO sightings to Project Unity in 2022. We can also take an interesting look at U.S. Navy Admiral William F. Rayburn. Alongside John Deutsch and Bobby Ray Inman, Rayburn was plucked for senior SAIC roles to stack the contractor's payroll with scores of influential members of the national security establishment.
Prior to his retirement from the Navy in 1963, and also prior to his positions within SAIC and the Director of National Intelligence from 1965 to 1966, Rayburn led the project to develop the Polaris missile system. The Polaris program, a two-stage solid-fueled nuclear-armed submarine-launched ballistic missile, should sound extremely familiar to some viewers of my Naval UFO Legacy Program's video. A small detail, but in this video I discussed how Dr. John P. Craven, chief scientist of the Special Projects Office for the U.S. Navy, spearheaded the Deep System Submergence Project and resulting deep submergence rescue vehicles that I implicated in undersea UFO crash retrieval operations. Craven himself stated the aforementioned DSSP and submersibles DSRVs were used for a tremendous amount of clandestine, classified missions. Craven also stated in his book, The Silent War, the Deep Submergence Systems Project, which served to drastically increase the depth at which the Navy could perform undersea engineering operations, was created specifically to accomplish retrieval operations under Operation Sand Dollar. According to Craven's memoirs, Sand Dollar was a clandestine, highly compartmentalized project that was tasked to retrieve militarily sensitive hardware and other items of national security importance from the seafloor of the continental shelf in the deep marine environments. Craven wrote that this program, Sand Dollar, is classified to this day. Quote, I was shown an inventory itemizing the items known to be on the seabed and a map of their distribution throughout the world, end quote. Outlining the complicated obfuscation of Sand Dollar within the Special Access Program world, Dr. Craven would state Sand Dollar was buried within the structure of yet another secret program, itself hidden within the Polaris program. Intriguing how Sand Dollar, what I wager was a UFO crash retrieval program, was buried under a web of programs hidden within the Polaris program, a program itself founded by Admiral Rayburn, who would later on become an SAIC board member. Let's finally discuss a possible gatekeeper to waived Deep Sixth UFO programs with high-level ties to CIA and SAIC, Donald M. Kerr. Kerr joined SAIC in 1993 as a corporate executive and vice president and director. Kerr's resume includes director of Los Alamos National Labs from 79 to 85. President and Director of EG&G from 89 to 92, CIA Deputy Director for Science and Technology from 01 to 05, Director of the NRO from 05 to 07, and Principal Deputy Director of National Intelligence from 07 to 09. Recall, if you will, the 1985 Advanced Theoretical Physics Working Group and the notes of attendee Oki Shannon, former manager of special projects at Los Alamos and character in the Wilson-Davis notes, held at the BDM secure facility in McLean, Virginia. This conference, classified via DOE controls, was supervised by the infamous Colonel John B. Alexander and held at BDM just 1 year after one of the primary characters of this channel, U.S. Army INSCOM General Albert Stubblebine, joined BDM International. Oki Shannon's startling notes from this conference reveal several discussions of interest for this channel, including mention of a major engineering project that existed under Admiral Bobby Ray Inman, naval information on underwater UFO hotspots near Golfo San Matias, Argentina, and mention of an organization that collects, manages, and destroys UFO information. Scribbled within the notes are actions Oki wished to pursue to continue a quest for cracking UFO reverse engineering programs. Towards the end of this page is a note discussing approaching Donald Kerr for influence and money. In almost every single project I do, I discuss the CIA's Office of Global Access, established under the CIA's Directorate of Science and Technology in 2003, to serve as a logistics coordinator harnessing the muscle of Joint Special Operations Command for foreign UFO crash retrievals. This CIA DS&T was additionally, alongside the Navy, the co-founder of NURO, the National Underwater Reconnaissance Office, the U.S.'s most secret intelligence agency and one I have connected to underwater UFO crash retrievals. This Office of Global Access was actually established under the watch of Donald Kerr, former VP of SAIC in the 90s, who, remember, served as the Deputy Director of the CIA's Directorate of Science and Technology from 01 to 05.
Well, so then how does, I mean, I don't want to cut you off, but yeah. How does a program like that get funded?
I will give you generalities. I can get very specific in a closed session, but a misappropriation of funds and
Does that mean that there is money in the budget that is said to go to a program, but it doesn't, and it goes to something else?
Yes, I have specific knowledge of that. Yep.
Do you think U.S. corporations are overcharging for certain tech they're selling to the U.S. government, and that additional money is going to programs?
Correct, through something called IRAD.
In 2004, Catherine Austin Fitz, former Assistant Secretary for Housing and Urban Development, released the now legendary paper titled Black Budget of the United States. Throughout the 21st century, Fitz has identified trillions of dollars spent on the U.S. black budget. Fitz has outlined $21 trillion in unauthorized spending in the Departments of Defense and Housing and Urban Development from 1995 to 2015. Much of this money on UFO-related, quote-unquote, clandestine military R&D. Recently, Fitz made a couple of podcast appearances on Tucker Carlson's and Danny Jones shows, making some incredible statements regarding one of my favorite topics, deep underground military bases, or DUMs. Over the years, Fitz has also engaged in some intriguing discussion of UFO legacy programs on Dark Journalist's page, including UFO Economies 1, 2, and 3.
Here's the thing, and I'm glad you brought this up, because I know you've had Richard on, and again, Richard's going to be on the Solaria Report next week.
And that's Richard Dolan, the author of UFOs and the National Security State.
Well, that's the best book in terms of describing the mechanisms put in place after World War II to create, you know, a far expanded infrastructure for what I call the black budget.
Uh-huh.
So you literally see the federal credit engineered in a way that can generate trillions and trillions of dollars for an infrastructure of private corporations and investors to control the most powerful technology in the world. And to try and figure out what that technology is, you know, is to go down a rabbit hole full of very squiggly information about,
right,
you know, what is and is not true. But suffice it to say, you know, that a tremendous amount of that money has gone into very high technology weaponry and certainly an investment in space and space travel.
Fitz is surprisingly well-versed in UFO legacy programs, commenting on covert space economies, breakaway civilizations, the SDI or Strategic Defense Initiative being used to counter extraterrestrial threats, and black budget operations surrounding UFOs. Fitz even once argued to Dark Journalist up to $60 trillion may have been spent on secret space program and UFO technologies, suggesting TUO, or technologies of unknown origin, may be worth up to $150 trillion. Perhaps one day I can sit down with Catherine Austin Fitz and have a very poignant discussion on UFO legacy program financing, but I would like to circle back to Black Budget of the United States. In the paper, Fitz writes, quote, large portions of the nation's wealth is being illegally diverted into secret, unaccountable channels, end quote, to support clandestine domestic military research and development. Whilst at the Department of Housing and Urban Development, Fitz came across evidence IT/accounting systems providers were responsible for the obfuscation of funds and omitting data where DOD funds were directed. These included Lockheed Martin Information Systems, which would later merge with Leidos in 2015, IBM, DynCorp, and of course, SAIC.
One of the things, I used to have these fights with the defense contractors because I was required to get the accounts when I still needed data, and the systems were run by the big defense contractors at HUD. And they would refuse to give me the data. So I'd have these wars with them. It's like, who really runs HUD? Is it the defense contractor or is it the point, you know, the person right. who's legally responsible?
Right.
In speculating, I'd say they have a very perfect situation to do any type of research they want to under the guise of anything. I mean, and call it what they want, and they definitely aren't working alone in anything. So anybody doing business with them, they are what's called like a conglomerate. There's SAIC, but it's made up of numerous individual corporations. And these corporations, some of them are very well known and some of them are smaller, but they have some very big genius minds there and a lot of very cutting edge work being done there and millions of dollars coming in. And since it's privately owned corporations, I don't know, the only people they'd have to report to is the ones they're doing business with and are contracting with. And so if the people they're contracting with which wish to do something that maybe isn't in the best interest of everyone, nobody's going to know about it. It's all kept in-house. The funding, the financing, the contracts, there should be files, there should be documentation, and a regular timeline of events on every project, which did not exist whatsoever. And if I'm working in a military division and I have access to all the files, where were these? Where was this documentation? So it made me very suspicious of where all this money was going.
Let's now reference the 2001 testimony of former SAIC administrative employee Denise McKenzie. McKenzie's testimony is somewhat legendary in the UFO Legacy Program financial analyst community. After all, McKenzie's experiences were detailed on text in Stephen Greer's 2001 disclosure briefing document, and she was never heard from again.
It's even more interesting, the big defense contractor that does all the UFO stuff, like for the military and the government, is in La Jolla. And out in front of their building, they have 2 8-foot-tall Egyptian statues. And one is holding a pyramid in his hand, and it says the past. And one's holding a pyramid in his hand, and it says the future. And they're big bronze statues in front of this company. And this company, I have on one of these tapes, a girl testifying how they put billions of dollars or millions of dollars into UFO-related programs, and they create them, and they're fake. So then they get audited by the General Accounting Office of the United States government. It just looks like all the money's going into more helicopters, but it's really going into, like, UFO-related programs.
Today, I'm thrilled to announce I have found McKenzie's March 2001 videotaped interview nestled within the files of the DPI archive. I have also found and made outreach to Mrs. McKenzie herself. I do hope she connects with me in the future, but for now, let's analyze her complete recorded testimony. McKenzie was introduced to SAIC while working retail in 1992. While working at a fabric store in a San Diego mall, a part-time co-worker of McKenzie named Sophia asked her to move to SAIC at La Jolla, San Diego, where Sophia primarily worked. Denise had never heard of the defense giant, but was intrigued to work a cushy office job on a massive campus. When she first visited the La Jolla site, McKenzie expected to interview for an administrative assistant position. But with no paperwork or meetings, McKenzie was immediately told she had the job. She didn't even know the department in which she was supposed to work. During her first few days in the office, McKenzie noticed her recruiter, Sophia, was not present at SAIC and wouldn't show up for another 2 to 3 weeks. During her first 3 to 4 days of work, McKenzie had no real tasks. She would wander her building of work to look busy, gauging the departments, computer files, and personnel. McKenzie would realize she worked within SAIC's military contract division. Within SAIC La Jolla on Campus Drive, Denise would notice a highly classified biological division that featured extremely strict personnel access control. And let's take a quick pause here. SAIC has a history of intriguing chemical and biological contracts. Let's note this 2005 SAIC Research, Development, Test and Evaluation Group contract that tasked SAIC's McLean, Virginia and San Diego, California divisions to perform biological, chemical, radiological, nuclear, and explosive, or CBRNE work with the Air Force Operational Test Center and Evaluation Center, or AFOTEC, at Kirtland Air Force Base, New Mexico. Kirtland Air Force Base is not only home to a deep underground military installation, but also to Sandia National Labs, an FFRDC, which is a usual tricky customer of this channel for operational locations of UFO legacy programs. Recurring viewers of my channel will absolutely recognize Sandia, and by the way, SAIC has a history of absolutely enormous contracts with Sandia National Labs. such as this 2013 $228 million contract for IT consolidation for, quote, mission-specific information technology, research development, and integration of capabilities while maintaining high-performance and central hosting computing, desktop services, and cybersecurity, end quote. What is interesting about this specific relationship with SAIC and AFO Tech for CBRNE work we just mentioned above is a quote from SAIC's Senior Vice President Chuck Zhang, quote,
"Under the CBRNE contract, SAIC will assess new and emerging technologies and concepts. We'll work to determine their technological maturity when operated under realistic environments to help give U.S. warfighters the tools they need to do their jobs more safely and effectively," end quote.
It is interesting how SAIC's biological work has been contracted from AFO Tech, or the Air Force Operational Test and Evaluation Center we just mentioned above. AFO Tech historically has supported the Deputy Undersecretary of Defense Advanced Systems and Concepts, or DUSD AS&C, for all non-traditional acquisition programs. In the future, I'll be paying much closer attention to this DUSD AS&C and the office's possible involvement in UFO legacy programs. After all, according to the General Accounting Office in 2002, DUSD AS&C was responsible for DoD Advanced Concept Technology Demonstration Programs. The connections to our work here are indeed perplexing. SAIC has a history of being awarded sole source contracts to support the Joint Technology Assessment Activity, or JTAA. A large part of the JTAA portfolio supports the Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Advanced Systems and Concepts, or the DUSD AS&C. Many of these sole source SAIC JTAA contracts are for work at, you guessed it, the Naval Surface Warfare Center Crane, which allegedly houses the Off-World Technologies Division. Funny enough, former DUSD AS&C appointees have a history of working for contractors suspected of being involved with UFO legacy program operations before and after service in the Office of the Undersecretary for Defense. These include Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Acquisition Sue C. Payton, who served as a manager of advanced technology in Lockheed Martin before her service in the DoD. But after that brief sidestep into SAIC and their biological departments, let's get back to the story of Denise McKenzie. McKenzie's work picked up when she received numerous letters from U.S. military and defense contractors requesting project report updates. McKenzie's immediate superiors blew off the importance of these project report updates, instructing McKenzie to issue a generic response to DoD and contractors alike, saying something to the effect of, quote, "We're working on it," end quote. Eager to perform efficiently in her new role, Denise McKenzie would retrieve files and computer disks pertaining to the letters she received. Each and every contract file, ranging from recent to several years old, contained only 2 to 3 form letters, all stating the same thing, quote, "It's being worked on," end quote. Some of these forms were signed by SAIC senior personnel, and some were left completely unsigned. These were enormous contracts worth millions and millions of dollars with absolutely zero activity on the contracts. McKenzie reported the missing contract activity to her recruiter, Sophia, who grew furious. Denise took initiative to search through SAIC's file database. During her interview, Denise pondered why Sophia, positioned under SAIC's head scientist, was working and recruiting new SAIC administrative personnel from a fabric store at a mall. McKenzie was ordered to bring all files and disks pertaining to relevant contracts to her immediate superiors and to forget all about the matter. In her following short time at SAIC, McKenzie was harassed by her head supervisor, a man named Stuart Stanley. "I'm trying to track down this Stuart, and while unable to find him yet, I have uncovered a man by that name residing in La Jolla, San Diego at the time of Denise's employment at SAIC. McKenzie's final straw occurred at the contractor when she choked on food and her immediate supervisor stood by and watched instead of attempting to help or to call an ambulance. After leaving the company, McKenzie would search the early internet for her recruiter, Sophia, and would eventually find an image of Sophia on a CIA website with a different first name and same last name. This webpage listed deceased agents. And while our incident took place in 1992, quote-unquote Sophia had supposedly died in 1987 or 1988. Remember, if you will, SAIC's relationship with the NSA, intimate ties with the U.S. Big Five intelligence agencies appear rampant with SAIC.
I thought they were getting a lot of money for doing nothing, and I didn't know where that money was going. It's like a front for something. I mean, if it wasn't such a big complex and evidently well known, which I found out, you know, as I worked there, I would have been very suspicious of what was going on. And if you wanted to just hide funds or push funds through and call it whatever you want, Joe's Market, I mean, it was like Joe's Market on a huge scale. So, but what was I to do about it? There wasn't much I could say or do about it.
McKenzie was not the only SAIC employee in 1992 to make such allegations. According to the excellent 2007 Vanity Fair article titled Washington Shadow, quote, according to one former executive in a sworn deposition in 1992, the practice of quote-unquote mischarging became institutionalized within the company, end quote. Analyzing McKenzie's testimony, we can see SAIC ran enormous contracts with DOD and other contractors with absolutely zero activity on these contracts. This implies these monies were funneled from legitimate projects into more secret black budget clandestine operations. And perhaps we have a real instance of this we can analyze.
Here, an artist's projection of the president's vision.
Into space, a layered defense to protect the country from nuclear devastation. U.S. spy satellites would watch the world below, detect Soviet missiles blasting off, compute the position and speed of each missile, alert battle stations in space, on Earth. The first response, space-based kinetic energy weapons fire high-speed projectiles from hypervelocity guns, intercepting enemy missiles as they are boosted through the atmosphere. Popped up into space, Earth-based nuclear-powered X-ray lasers fire their radioactive rays. Attack rays from land-based excimer lasers are redirected by huge mirrors orbiting in space. Chemical lasers fire beams that burn through the shell of the onrushing missile. Particle beam weapons with pulsing rays join the attack. Still over the atmosphere.
In the same year of 1992, then Secretary of Defense, the infamous Dick Cheney, was called to investigate whistleblower claims of fraud and waste surrounding the Strategic Defense Initiative. Since 1986, scientist Aldrich Saucier claimed the SDI or Star Wars program displayed a pattern of, quote, mismanagement and abuse and wasteful spending on research and development, end quote, misreporting and misleading Congress of its efficacy. Saucier was dismissed from the Star Wars program for, quote unquote, poor performance and was even investigated by the FBI. Democratic Congressman John Conyers determined actions against Saucier were whistleblower retaliatory activities. And by 1992, Cheney reviewed the case and Saucier was given whistleblower protection. But why is any of this important here? I have talked in several projects of backdoor UFO programs being built into Ronald Reagan's 1983 Strategic Defense Initiative, a missile defense system built to defend the United States from attacks by ballistic nuclear missiles. Let's break this down in a second, but since SDI's inception in 1983, U.S. contractors, including SAIC and their systems integrator abilities, were relied on more than ever by the Defense Department for successful implementation of SDI. In 1985, SAIC had an employee, retired USAF two-star general Jasper Welch, that exclusively coordinated with Star Wars efforts. In 1985, SAIC had won more Strategic Defense Initiative-related contracts than General Dynamics, Northrop, Raytheon, Grumman, and the RAND Corporation combined. Beginning in 1978 and throughout Star Wars, SAIC was, quote, the best represented contractor, end quote, for a key SDI technology, particle beam weapons. So essentially, SAIC had been accused by Catherine Austin Fitz as back-channeling money from legitimate contracts into clandestine operations. Ronald Reagan's Strategic Defense Initiative was proven by the whistleblower claims of Aldrich Saucier to purposely mislead Congress on the efficacy of SDI and, quote, wasteful spending on research and development, end quote. And SAIC was considered a critical contractor for their expertise and reliability for critical work on SDI. Now, I just previously said there are numerous implications. SDI actually held a swath of UFO programs that saw secret monies backchanneled from primarily SDI funding mechanisms. With SAIC's work on SDI and history of illegally diverting funds from legitimate to black budget contracts, I do not at all think it is a stretch to assume SAIC was one of the primary contractors engaged with SDI and UFO legacy programs. Previously, I discussed the involvement of Northrop, the Grumman Corporation, and Teledyne Ryan, a Northrop Grumman purchase, in regards to SDI and UFO programs, but today we have much more to discuss. One whistleblower I have covered in depth on this channel is former USAF Master Sergeant Edgar Fouché and his claims of the reverse-engineered alien reproduction vehicle called the TR-3B. As I have stated before, although Fouché was unable to provide material evidence for the existence of TR-3B, his disclosures have served to deliver some extremely actionable intelligence. During his 1998 disclosures, Fouché would discuss the DARS, the Defense Advanced Research Center, allegedly stationed underground near Area 51 Groom Lake, that worked on UFO reverse engineering and material exploitation projects. The DARS in question, the Defense Advanced Research Center, not to be confused with DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, was actually a proposed institution. So let's reference this declassified Advanced Research Project Agency study written in 1973. The study in question was written as a historical evaluation of the R&D Management Institution, ARPA, who at this time had, quote, remarkably little in the way of an official record or institutional memory had been established, end quote. On page 82 of the document, under ARPA Laboratories, discussing advanced aerospace projects, we find a DoD directive showing the Army Ballistic Missile Agency was considered for transfer into the DARS, the Defense Advanced Research Center, linking the department to the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. And it is worth noting the Army Ballistic Missile Agency was commanded by Nazi V-2 rocket scientist and Operation Paperclip transfer Wernher von Braun. Von Braun's mentor was father of German rocketry, Hermann Oberth, who performed extensive study on UFOs. And I have previously covered how extensively Nazi scientists were involved in early UFO programs, such as discussing Hans Kammler, director of numerous Nazi special weapons projects, who may have been tasked with studying the 1933 Magenta Italy crashed UFO, who curiously went missing near the end of the war, but was claimed to be working with Americans post-World War II. As well as Xavier Dorsch, head of the TOT organization, who was requested by Air Material Command for Operation Paperclip for underground plant construction. Fouché would state DARS was bolstered in the mid-1980s when the institution was flushed with money from the Strategic Defense Initiative. Fouché and his sources estimated up to 35% of SDI's funding was siphoned off to support the UFO black programs. Indeed, for its maiden operational flight in the mid-1990s, Fouché would state the TR-3B, whose program was administrated by the NRO, NSA, and CIA, and worked primarily by Lockheed, Boeing, Northrop, and Teledyne Ryan, the reverse-engineered vehicle was built by Strategic Defense Initiative money. In 2013, stealth aircraft researcher Joseph Jones would claim the existence of Project Brilliant Buzzard, a codename for an airborne surveillance and tracking program that dealt with setting up an electromagnetic shield around the US utilizing an enormous boomerang-shaped craft. This boomerang featured an almost indefinite loiter time, and Brilliant Buzzard was allegedly primarily contracted to Boeing. The Brilliant Buzzard craft was seemingly responsible for 25,000 eyewitness sightings between 1983 and 1989 of the Hudson Valley boomerang. And this enormous craft was, of course, allegedly a program born from the Strategic Defense Initiative. Viewers of my channel will know I adore referencing the work of legendary UFO crash retrieval investigator Leonard Stringfield to analyze relevant UFO crash retrieval and material exploitation cases. And as it turns out, we do have a rather intriguing Star Wars case in Crash Retrieval Status Reports 1 through 7, specifically 1991's UFO Crash Retrieval's The Inner Sanctum Status Report 6. Stringfield's eclectic work analyzed a 1989 UFO crash retrieval case alleged to have occurred over Mauritius Bay, Long Island, New York, USA. Now, be mindful that there is an additional Long Island, New York UFO crash retrieval case that allegedly occurred in 1992. This 92 case is indeed perplexing and features numerous eyewitnesses and the possible involvement of the Department of Energy's FFRDC Brookhaven National Laboratory located in Upton, New York. Perhaps we will revisit this case in an extended session soon, but let's circle back to 1989, the work of Stringfield, and reporting from LIUFON, the Long Island UFO Network. This case details a crashed UFO in the area of Mauritius Bay off the south shore of Suffolk County, Long Island, New York, on the early morning of 29 September 1989. And according to LIUFON and Stringfield, the craft crashing was not an accident, but instead a carefully planned and executed military intelligence operation to down the craft. According to an anonymous Air Force intelligence colonel, quote,
"The incident involved the downing of a UFO by the use of a U.S. Star Wars weapon on that night. The craft crashed into the dune area where it was subsequently retrieved," end quote.
Quite shockingly, this unnamed colonel additionally stated 18 U.S. servicemen were killed by biologics on board the craft, who retaliated with a device that, quote,
"generates extremely low-frequency sound waves, which can destroy the molecular cohesiveness of known matter."
Quite the extraordinary claim, and a claim that I can find no record of regarding the deaths of several U.S. servicemen. However, multiple eyewitnesses, including a commodities broker, claim to have seen helicopters transporting a large object and military vehicles with a police escort headed towards Brookhaven National Labs. Another anonymous source, this time a Brookhaven scientist named Dr. Nick, told LIUFON investigators a large wedge or boomerang-shaped object with shockingly low mass was recovered and transported to Brookhaven. Having previously worked under Wright-Patterson AFB to study UFOs, Dr. Nick claimed the weapon utilized to down the craft was constructed by AIL Electronics. Now remember how the anonymous colonel claimed the craft was downed by a Strategic Defense Initiative weapon, and according to Dr. Nick, Brookhaven National Labs deployed this weapon. Brookhaven is, of course, a Department of Energy-sponsored FFRDC. Brookhaven additionally did work on the Strategic Defense Initiative, such as aiding in SDI's lethality and target hardening projects. Reference, for example, this 1987 DTIC document titled, quote, "Report to the Congress on Strategic Defense Initiative," end quote. Alongside White Sands Missile Range and Los Alamos National Labs, Brookhaven aided SDI through study and testing of SDI weapons that, quote, "required lethal energy to achieve a sure kill against the full spectrum of enemy targets," end quote. One contractor that worked alongside Brookhaven, White Sands, and Los Alamos for SDI's lethality and target hardening program was, of course, SAIC. Interesting how SAIC in Brookhaven, which was allegedly involved with shooting down a UFO over Long Island, New York, both worked on SDI's and specifically the Defense Nuclear Agency's lethality and target hardening programs that had a specific goal of assessing the lethality of X-ray laser weapons against SDI threats. All this boils down, of course, to the subject of directed energy weapons. Sources of mine have specifically informed me of SDI X-ray weapons that were used to disable and down UFOs. These connections between SAIC, black budget monies, and Reagan's Strategic Defense Initiative are quite potent and well worth exploring further in our future studies. SAIC's misappropriation of funds doesn't just stop with the testimony of McKenzie or likely involvement with SDI UFO programs. No, we have very real examples of SAIC wasting obscene amounts of money on contracts. In 2002, a consortium run by SAIC, including Boeing and Booz Allen Hamilton, was chosen by the National Security Agency to create Trailblazer, a system intended to analyze mass collections of data on communication methods such as cell phones, email, and internet. This contract was worth at its inception over $280 million and ballooned to billions within 4 years. This program was even worked on by SAIC board member Bobby Ray Inman. multiple NSA employees filed a complaint with the DOD Inspector General regarding enormous amounts of fraud, waste, and abuse existing in SAIC's Trailblazer when a successful operating prototype had already previously existed. By 2005, the DOD Inspector General released a report on the investigation where 90%+ of the findings were redacted. Some of the whistleblowers here, including NSA employee William Binney, were harassed and raided by the FBI. Interesting how Binney has additionally commented on UFOs.
Well, I think my problem is just like the UFO thing. If, unless they start addressing these kinds of things, that people's observations or basic measurements or factual kind of evidence that simply exists, unless they start addressing them, there's always going to be questions. People are going to question them and never. Especially now with the government, how much trust do you have in this government?
Bizarrely, after the colossal failure that was Trailblazer, SAIC was immediately awarded a contract for Execute Locus, a revised Trailblazer program well worth $361 million. SAIC's failed efforts on enormous contracts are not uncommon. Take VCF, for example, Virtual Case File, a $124 million contract with the FBI to create an online central repository of data to serve the FBI. Only 3 years into Virtual Case File, the project was written off by a global publication for technology professionals as the, quote, most highly publicized software failure in history, end quote. According to the 2007 Vanity Fair article on SAIC we discussed earlier, quote,
if it turns out they can't deliver, new contracts will simply be drawn up, end quote.
Indeed, SAIC's convenient ineptitude to secure lucrative contracts for no work and whopping failures doesn't just end here. In 2005, SAIC's La Jolla, San Diego location, which was patrolled by DOD-certified industrial security personnel, was broken into. This never-solved burglary, according to SAIC, saw the theft of one desktop computer and four laptops out of 13 private offices containing personal data on thousands of present and past employees, presumably including the company's many former CIA operatives, NSA executives, and Pentagon officials. Quite the targeted theft here. And I really cannot stress here how many incredibly suspicious and dubious actions SAIC has conducted over the years that speaks to misappropriation and funneling of funds used, in my opinion, for black budget UFO programs. Further examples in this laundry list include SAIC defrauding the US government from 1987 to 1995. By creating fake, non-functioning prototypes for a USAF contract to develop flat panel liquid crystal displays to be used on various fighter jets, as well as an early 2000s incident in which SAIC was charged with fraud for submitting, quote, false and fraudulent statements of its expected cost and profits, end quote, for waste cleanup at various U.S. Air Force bases. But before we move on here, I would like to touch on some of the relationships SAIC has maintained with DOD defense contractors that have been time and time again implicated with black budget projects and UFO legacy programs. I'd like to draw your attention back to EG&G, also known as Edgerton, Germanhausen, and Greer Inc., and I would wager most on this channel have some familiarity with this intriguing contractor that historically engaged closely with some of the US's most secret technologies. Started by Massachusetts Institute of Technology professor Harold Edgerton in 1931, EG&G's activities are legendary in the UFO community before the company was acquired by URS in 2002 and again by AECOM in 2014. Historically, EG&G shared responsibility at the Nevada test site, including Nellis Air Force Base and Area 51, for weapons development and high-tech testing, alongside Lawrence Livermore Labs, Raytheon, and others. EG&G's legendary status in the UFO community arose from it being labeled as the contractor Bob Lazar claimed hired him to reverse-engineer UFO propulsion systems at Area 51 Site 4. Quite recently, I also discussed how EG&G was one of multiple components connected with UFO legacy programs that comprise the Department of Energy NEST, or Nuclear Emergency Response Team, and how I wagered the DOE NEST, supported by EG&G, was the on-site technical and scientific team that recovered a crashed UFO in the Peruvian jungle in 1997, witnessed by USMC Lance Corporal Jonathan Weygandt. According to journalist George Knapp, Alfred O'Donnell, a now deceased former senior manager at EG&G, relayed to Knapp that quote-unquote they, meaning EG&G, had in its possession a flying saucer recovered in New Mexico, as well as live non-human beings that looked vaguely human. Remember EG&G, but just stick around here with me for a second, as I state to probably an annoying degree, a key component overlooked from joint USG contractor UFO legacy program operations are the subject matter experts and R&D ACEs, FFRDCs, or federally funded research and development centers. Over the course of my work, I have accused numerous such FFRDCs as acting as key players in UFO material exploitation and crash retrieval programs, including Sandia National Labs, Lawrence Livermore National Labs, Los Alamos National Labs, the Center for Naval Analyses, the MITRE Corporation, the RAND Corporation, and more. The administrator for Los Alamos National Labs, for example, on behalf of the Department of Energy, is a little-known corporation known as Triad National Security, LLC. Triad National Security has a storied history of intriguing publications, but relevant to our discussion is how Triad is comprised of three entities: Texas A&M University, the University of California, and Battelle Memorial Institute. Alongside FFRDCs, I have spoken on their university semi-private counterparts, UARCs, or university-affiliated research centers, and their involvement in UFO legacy programs. The two universities comprising Triad are not UARCs, but interesting nonetheless. The contractor here of interest within Triad is Battelle, and Battelle is no stranger to this channel. From its possible involvement studying Roswell shape memory alloys, to its parallel Project Blue Book called Project Stork, to research associating Battelle to Dugway Proving Ground UFO legacy programs, Battelle is infamous on this channel. Battelle itself runs multiple FFRDCs, including Oak Ridge, a Sean Kirkpatrick safe haven post-Aero where he joined as CTO, Savannah River National Labs, and the National Biodefense Analysis and Countermeasures Center, all of whom I suspect are involved in UFO legacy programs. So isn't it interesting that Battelle formed a new LLC under a trio of institutions to manage sites for the Department of Energy? Here we can finally circle back. On 15 September 2004, SAIC entered into a similar venture. Analyzing a Form 10 SEC document, we can see that in 2004, SAIC entered into an agreement with EG&G Technical Services, as well as Parsons Infrastructure and Technology Group, Inc., to form RDS, Research and Development Solutions, LLC. A now-defunct group, RDS was quickly assigned to the Department of Energy's National Energy Technical Laboratory shortly after its founding, with a total value of $217 million. Indeed, by 27 September 2004, RDS was securing even more contracts with DOE, with some contracts of up to $41 million. The DOE's National Energy Technical Laboratory's mission is to, quote, advance the national economic and energy security of the United States, end quote. In RDS's founding year, the NETL had a budget of over $900 million, which was used for R&D programs in support of the DOE's offices of fossil energy, energy efficiency, and renewable energy and energy assurance, as well as work with other federal agencies. RDS was brought on to, quote, support the management and integration of all stages of science and technological development at NETL, which could lead to commercially viable solutions in the energy area. Specific technical services areas to be performed include R&D technology planning and analysis, R&D operations, process engineering design and analysis, computational research, simulation and visualization, environment, safety and health assurance, and partnership development, end quote. Of course, NETL has no direct connection we can see to UFO legacy programs, but it is interesting that NETL does have connections to three companies ranging from possibly to almost certainly involved in UFO legacy programs. Outside of RDS, SAIC engaged in multiple projects with EG&G, as well as other contractors I suspect engage in UFO exploitation programs, such as L3Harris and Alien Science and Technology, as demonstrated in this 2005 $250 million Joint Warfighting Center support contract. If Alien Science and Technology sits on the tip of your tongue, this very well may be because this is a contractor mentioned alongside the testimony of Witness Ed. Ed served as a director for an electronics warfare group out of the Edwards 412th Test Wing, which is a major range and test facility base, and claimed to work directly with scientists and test pilots of reverse-engineered UFO vehicles. According to Ed, this program operated across the Nevada Test and Training Range, as well as the Edwards 412th Test Wing, comprising Edwards Air Force Base, Nellis Air Force Base, Area 51, S4, and underground connective tissue. After his very real time at Edwards, Ed went on to work at the Pentagon for USAF Research Development Test and Evaluation Panel Chain, where he claimed dozens of billions of dollars went missing each year in non-TOA or non-transfer of authority funds. During his time at the Pentagon, Ed also joined Alion Science and Technologies in Crystal City, Virginia as an F-35 subject matter expert. I have also guessed with the enormous bloated budget of the F-35 program, around $2 trillion, this aircraft platform may hide funds for UFO program operations. In a similar venture to RDS LLC by SAIC and EG&G and Triad National Security LLC under Battelle, in 1999, the same year Northrop Grumman purchased Teledyne Ryan and was engaged in a purchasing spree I have connected to UFO programs, SAIC and Northrop entered a joint venture to create AMSEC LLC. AMSEC grew from $100 million in revenue in 2000 to $500 million in revenue by 2007. Quote, AMSEC contracts primarily with the Navy are expected to gross $500 million next year. AMSEC is jointly owned by Newport News Shipbuilding, a division of Northrop Grumman, and Science Applications International Corporation, end quote. AMSEC specializes in providing naval architecture and marine engineering, naval ship systems assessments, maintenance engineering, waterfront maintenance support, acquisition program support, shipyard industrial engineering, and C4I installation and support services. AMSEC also provides life cycle integrated logistics services, including technical manual development, provisioning documentation, spare parts management, training development and delivery, and software development. By the 2010s, AMSEC operated as a major contractor providing engineering and technical services in support of the Navy Modernization Program. Some AMSEC IDIQ or Indefinite Delivery Indefinite Quantity contracts, a contracting method David Grush has stated support legacy program funding, saw 2015 contracts north of $83 million for Naval Surface Warfare Centers for AMSEC. Consider me intrigued here, as I have previously discussed, and as we will discuss later, the testimony of Randy Anderson and SAIC running the Off-World Technologies Division below NSWC Crane in 2012 to 2015. In my projects, when discussing DoD contractors, FFRDCs, and UARCs, I try and single out official reports, internal reports, Defense Technical Intelligence Center documents, etc., to attempt to draw parallels to UFO legacy programs. Previous references have included project updates on Project Stork and metallurgical alloy analysis by Battelle. TRW's work on high-speed underground tunnels possibly connecting deep underground military bases. 1972's Project Outgrowth out of the U.S. Air Force Rocket Propulsion Laboratory at Edwards Air Force Base detailing anti-gravity propulsion, and many, many, many more. Of course, seen as it's our subject today, SAIC has their own compelling historical documentation. In 1988, SAIC began work on a report titled Electric Propulsion Study for Edwards Air Force Base's Aeronautics Laboratory in the Air Force Space Technology Center, AFSC. Of course, as we've discussed throughout today, viewers of my channel will recall my extremely high conviction regarding a joint UFO-ARV alien reproduction vehicle program existing between Edwards Air Force Base and the Nevada Test and Training Range. Again, this was covered in great detail on my video on Ed, an electronics warfare test director out of Edwards who claimed to operate this program engaging with UFO legacy program scientists and ARV pilots. This 1988 SAIC document, released August of 1990, was written by SAIC investigator Dennis Cravens and featured extensive contribution from Assistant Director of Los Alamos National Labs Center for Explosive Technology Research, Ferris Williams. This paper discusses the Byfield-Brown effect, Los Alamos National Labs and Lawrence Livermore National Labs work on highly classified power density devices for the Strategic Defense Initiative, and ultimately suggests a five-dimensional approach to unifications of fields for novel propulsion methods. The report also suggests anti-gravity could be achieved by using rotating cylinders filled with mercury and should be considered for oceanic and atmospheric applications. Intriguing to say the least, as this rotating mercury system is the exact propulsion method USAF Master Sergeant Edgar Fouché claimed originated from reverse engineering out of Sandia and Lawrence Livermore National Labs that powered the TR-3B alien reproduction vehicle.
The circular plasma field accelerator ring called the magnetic field disruptor surrounds a rotatable crew compartment. It's far ahead of anything you've ever imagined as far as technology. Sandia and Livermore Laboratories developed a reverse-engineered MFD, and I believe the government will go at any lengths to protect this technology. But you're not going to be able to build one of these from what I tell you, nor am I. So the government will go to any lengths. Believe me, the plasma in this accelerator is mercury-based. It's pressurized at 250,000 atmospheres at a temperature of 150 degrees Kelvin, superconductivity, and accelerated to 60,000 revolutions per minute to create a superconductive plasma with a resulting gravity energy. The MFD generates a magnetic vortex field, which disrupts and neutralizes the effects of gravity on mass within proximity by 89%. Do not misunderstand, this is not anti-gravity. Anti-gravity you can use as a propulsive force.
Just for consideration, it is also interesting how this Ferris Williams, mentioned in this report, also spoke at a June 2001 UFO technology conference where it was mentioned his research was sponsored by Hal Puthoff. This conference was actually held in La Jolla, San Diego, in immediate proximity to numerous SAIC locations and their California headquarters. In July of 2018, journalist George Knapp released a leaked version of 38 DIRDs, or Defense Intelligence Reference Documents created under the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, or ATIP. ATIP, of course, is the controversial office Lou Elizondo claimed to direct, work for, or operate under in various capacities. Much discussion has been conducted surrounding ATIP versus AUSAP, the Advanced Aerospace Weapons System Applications Program. This is, of course, not the subject of today's video, and while I maintain ATIP was likely a white world cover for more classified programs under AUSAP, we will not be discussing the complexities of ATIP versus AUSAP today. On 16 January 2019, the Black Vault received a list of the aforementioned DIRD reports under FOIA. By March 2022, the Black Vault had successfully received copies of all 38 DIRD reports. I have discussed these DIRDs before. The subject matter and topics of them are simply astounding. The DIRDs feature highly scientific and technical reports by various authors that touch on multiple core positions from spatial slash temporal translation to armament. Some of these DIRDs include Focus on Space-Time Metric Engineering by Hal Puthoff, Brain-Machine Interfaces by Dr. R. Genick, Pulsed High-Power Microwave Weaponry by Dr. James Wells, and Advanced Aerospace Configurations by Dr. Paul Sizz. And it is interesting how in 2001, Dr. Sizz appeared as a whistleblower on Stephen Greer's 2001 disclosure briefing document. In his tape testimony to Greer, Sizz discussed his 8 years in the Air Force at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base and 30 years working for the McDonnell Douglas Aircraft Company. Sizz discussed his involvement tracking UFOs while at Wright-Patterson, some clocked at 20,000 miles per hour, performing unusual and silent maneuvers, as well as his time in classified projects at McDonnell Douglas. Within these DIRDs are numerous papers written by the infamous Dr. Eric Davis, covering such topics as traversable wormholes, stargates, and negative energy, anti-gravity for aerospace applications, and concepts for extracting energy from the quantum vacuum. In a similar vein to these exotic DIRDs, Davis had previously written a mind-boggling report from 2001 to 2003 titled Teleportation Physics Study. If you are somehow unfamiliar with Davis, please check out my project on the Wilson Davis Notes or my interview with Davis on Jesse Michaels' channel. Davis wrote Teleportation Physics Study for the Air Force Research Laboratory, AFRL, for Air Force Material Command at Edwards Air Force Base. Davis would go on to work at AFRL and would state during the Seoul 2024 symposium, AFRL was where he uncovered irrefutable evidence of UFO legacy program operations. Teleportation Physics Study devotes an entire report section to P-teleportation, a form of psychokinesis, quote,
similar to telekinesis, but generally used to designate the movement of objects through other physical objects over great distances. Telekinesis is a form of PK, which describes the movement of stationary objects without the use of any known physical force, and PK is essentially the direct influence of mind on matter without any known immediate physical energy or instrumentation, end quote.
This PK phenomenon, P teleportation section, stated much of the theoretical slash experimental slash operational work on the subject was based off a little known program conducted at SRI International with the NSA, sponsored at times by the CIA, DIA, and US Army INSCOM that would later relocate to SAIC. This was the infamous remote viewing program, aka Project Stargate.
Well, there was like CIA docs about consciousness and like weird remote viewing stuff. I mean, besides the Stargate program that were released in the FOIA reading room on CIA's website too, that are pretty trippy, where like, wow, CIA is looking into some really interesting stuff. I mean, they're a hardcore intel agency. What's going on there?
So, but it makes sense that they would kind of have to find out if that's like, you can't ignore that if you're really doing your job. If your job is intelligence, like, okay, like, let's look at this.
Or it's an aspect of the phenomenon because it's like a reach out from the crash retrieval program. Like, hey, I need you to look into some weird stuff because it might be the key unlock for something that we got in a warehouse, you know?
Yeah.
So,
whoa.
I speak often on the possibility some non-human vehicles are controlled not with complex control surfaces, but instead with thoughts or cognition. These sentiments have largely and recently been associated with Jake Barber and the discussion of psionics and programs focused on utilizing anomalous cognition to lure in UFO to shoot them down with EMP weaponry.
And we came to the conclusion even in those days that these were the reason most flying saucers have failed is because our conclusion was that this being is part of the guidance system. He's part of that saucer.
But as we just saw, discussion of UFOs and cognition far predate Barber. The late Colonel Philip J. Corso would claim he and the Army's Foreign Technology Division under Arthur Trudeau were in the early 1960s, tasked with numerous projects for the purpose of seeding and adapting technologies plucked from UFO crash retrievals, specifically Roswell, into the U.S. military and industry if possible. One such project started in 1961 was focused on, quote, control guidance by brainwaves, end quote. Corso had learned from official Roswell files the biologics on board the crashed disk were part of the guidance system. The Foreign Technology Division sought to adapt this technology to allow humans to control ballistic missiles via brainwaves.
I've just had one of the most senior scientists in the U.S. Defense Department, former, admit to me that he was read into a UFO crash retrieval program. I've spoken to well over 20 people now. What I was told consistently was the technology is mind-blowing and they are not in a position to be able to engineer it yet because it's just light years beyond what we have. It's a completely new type of physics, is what one person said to me. And you might be interested in this, Jay, because of the sort of direction that your interests have taken. Without expanding on it, one of the people I spoke to told me that it had a lot to do with a mind interface connection with the engineering, that it was driven by some kind of consciousness or some kind of intelligent connection with machinery that was beyond our understanding.
Indeed, similar claims can be found within the files of the late legendary Leonard Stringfield. Analyzing Stringfield's notes reveals a conversation with one Mr. Hines, who had a source from Bell Labs. Of course, Bell Labs I've discussed before as having involvement in UFO legacy programs. Quote,
Len spoke to a Mr. Hines, who had a source from Bell Labs. The informant stated that he was on the flight line at a California Air Force base in the early 1950s and saw a UFO retrieval brought in. He allegedly saw a cutaway of the recovered craft, plus the headband transceiver worn by the aliens. Anyone involved with the retrieval was subject to intense scrutiny and search. Apparently, one man must have kept a part of the craft, and he mysteriously disappeared. He was never seen again.
What I can tell you is that people who work on this technology tell me it has no control systems, no control surfaces, no visible propulsion system, no dials, no levers, no buttons. It's a shell. They tell me it's operated by consciousness. Go figure.
When analyzing USG special access programs focused on anomalous mental phenomena being moved into the secrecy of the corporate world, I can't help but to think of direct parallels to UFO legacy programs. Acknowledged U.S. programs into anomalous cognition began in 1977 with Project Stargate. Project Stargate was a joint secret Army, DIA, CIA, and SRI international contractor program tasked to investigate the potential for military use of psychic phenomena. The program went by many codenames based on operational agencies within the program. Gondola Wish, Stargate, Sunstreak for the CIA, Grill Flame for INSCOM, Center Lane for the DIA, etc. This was until 1991, when the project would consolidate under the Stargate Project and be moved to our subject of today, SAIC. Stargate was initially operated out of Fort Meade, Maryland, with a key sponsor of the work being Major General Albert Stubblebine. Stubblebine founded U.S. Army Intelligence and Security Command, INSCOM. INSCOM initially commanded the U.S. Special Forces Unit, the ISA, Intelligence Support Activity. The ISA was later on moved to JSOC, Joint Special Operations Command, where I and others like Chris Sharp have accused JSOC elements of participating in foreign UFO crash retrievals alongside the CIA Office of Global Access. Stubblebine himself has been accused by numerous individuals, such as Philip J. Corso and Stephen Greer, as participating directly in UFO material exploitation programs at Fort Huachuca, funding clandestine Men in Black type entities, and much more. Stubblebine, according to Greer, is the man who offered Greer $2 billion to absorb Greer's organization, CSETI, into the general's work. So it is quite intriguing a general with keen aptitude for anomalous cognition would also be accused of participating in UFO legacy program operations. This reminds me of the quote we just heard from David Grush. But let's focus our work back to SAIC. SAIC would continue Stargate from 1991 to 1994. However, I would wager this work continued long after 1994. SAIC published 10 primary studies focused on remote viewing and psi phenomena. SAIC would coin the terms anomalous cognition, also known as remote viewing or clairvoyance, a quote, form of information transfer in which all known sensorial stimuli are absent. That is, some individuals are able to gain access to information by an as yet unknown process, end quote. As well as anomalous perturbation, aka psychokinesis, a quote, form of interaction with matter in which all known physical mechanisms are absent. That is, some individuals are able to influence matter by an as yet unknown process, end quote. In their official reports, SAIC stated they were, and earlier programs were, able to verify the existence of anomalous cognition, but not able to verify the existence of anomalous perturbation. SAIC would employ agents and beacons for such experiments. Agents displayed a quantitative measurement of displays of anomalous cognition, and beacons served as individuals who would engage in direct sensorial stimuli from an intended target to act as a focus of attention for the anomalous cognition receiver. Some pretty incredible stuff I know, and as I have stated before on numerous occasions, I am still myself learning about psi phenomena in relation to the subject of UFOs. So for now, we will leave SAIC's work into AC and AP, but perhaps we will revisit the subject in the future. But SAIC's possible hidden continuation of Stargate does tie into the last subject we will discuss today.
Naval Support Activity Crane, home to one of the nation's most important military laboratories, is sometimes referred to as the Pentagon's best-kept secret, Senator Joe Donnelly, Indiana.
As I mentioned at the beginning of this video, I have covered the case of Randy Anderson in the Off-World Technologies Division underneath NSWC Crane before. This early investigation was taken down to support Randy's testimony reaching a wider audience on Jesse Michael's platform. With this investigation into SAIC, I thought it prudent to make my investigation into Randy Anderson available again. This is because the overwhelming majority of that investigation was labeling with high confidence SAIC as the contractor in question in charge of a secret division housing recovered technology. So for the full picture, I recommend watching my video to learn more about the data, investigation, contractors, military units, and more associated with Randy's story, and to hear more from Randy overall, I highly recommend viewing Jesse's video. But let's briefly summarize Randy's experience and tie it into SAIC. In the early to mid-2010s, Randy was sent to the Naval Surface Warfare Center in Crane, Indiana for advanced weapons training. Anderson served as a U.S. Army Green Beret, 18 Bravo Weapons Sergeant, which meant the soldier was a highly trained expert in U.S. and foreign small arms weaponry and explosives. Anderson and his fellow Green Berets were sent to Crane for weapons testing and training courses. However, due to holding a TSSCI clearance, Anderson and one other soldier were shown classified foreign and domestic weapon platforms. These included disruptive technologies such as unique Russian ballistics. But quickly, what is Crane? The Naval Surface Warfare Center, or NSWC, is part of the Naval Support Activity Crane alongside the U.S. Army Ammunition Activity, which stockpiles much of the U.S. mainland's munitions. Crane, Indiana was chosen for these stockpile duties during World War II, as such a landlocked state would have proved to have been difficult to be targeted by enemy forces. NSWC Crane is a massive facility, with several underground layers highlighted as the premier Navy lab, whose mission is to, quote, provide acquisition and in-service engineering and technical support for sensors, electronics, electronic warfare, and special warfare weapons, end quote. Operations at Crane are divided into three distinct focus areas: strategic missions, electronic warfare, and expeditionary warfare. But this location doesn't focus on conventional missions. As we see from this recent Duke University Long Range Broad Agency announcement, a key focus of Crane's programs are, quote, advanced concepts and technologies, end quote. And we discuss some of these advanced concepts and technologies earlier in this project with mention of SAIC and the JTAA. The underground presence of the base is key to mention here. Not only are there numerous underground bunkers for munition storage hidden below the ground, but also small arms testing resources, such as an underground 100-meter firing range. Now, as I mentioned earlier, Randy was at Crane to test advanced foreign and domestic weaponry. The Crane facility has historically worked closely with the U.S. Army for weapons testing, training, and defensive capabilities, such as countering improvised explosive devices in Iraq. And the NSWC is no stranger to reverse engineering critical technology to maintain quote-unquote fleet readiness, such as an intriguing black box I covered extensively in my first video on Randy Anderson. To the best of my knowledge, NSWC Crane is integral to naval UFO legacy programs. Previously, not only did I tie intriguing NSWC Crane contracts to work done on UFO underwater recovery programs operating out of the Navy alongside Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute and U.S. intelligence agencies such as the NRO and the National Underwater Reconnaissance Office, but let's also mention that NSWC Crane likely resides in a complex system of naval centers engaged in TUO, technologies of unknown origin, housing, and exploitation. I know I say this all the time, but this really is another video for another day, as I am still deeply engaged with this research. The thesis I am building here, however, is this: Naval Undersea Warfare Center divisions such as Keyport and university-affiliated research centers such as the Applied Research Laboratory at the University of Hawaii at Manoa engage with UFO data. Naval Surface Warfare Centers such as Crane engage with TUO hardware. And nav air installations like China Lake and Patuxent River deal with quote-unquote aircraft. This really will be a worthy thread we will pull on a bit now and more in the future that quite likely has SAIC written all over it. On 5 June 2025, Immaculate Constellation whistleblower Matthew Brown illustrated an enormously impactful tweet that directly referenced UFO materials or craft being stored at the Patuxent River Special Project Hangars. that are owned by the Amentum Corporation amongst quote-unquote other fund spaces. Of course, alongside Amentum, SAIC has a significant presence at the Naval Air Station Patuxent River, enjoying similarly lucrative contracts to NSWC Crane while majorly supporting Pax River's Naval Air Warfare Center Aircraft Division and Ship and Air Integration Warfare Division. Remember how earlier in this project we discussed joint ventures with SAIC and EG&G and SAIC and Northrop, possibly linked to UFO legacy programs? Well, SAIC has engaged in similar practices with Amentum, a contractor Matt Brown has now accused of housing UFO materials at NAVAIR Pax River. SAIC and Amentum joined forces to form FSA, a contractor that as recently as 2020 has secured IDIQ federal contracts in excess of $1.3 billion. Perhaps in the future we can shed more light on possible joint SAIC-Amentum work on UFO legacy programs at major naval RDT&E stations. Anyways, after observing prosaic disruptive technologies, Randy and one of his fellow soldiers were taken to a pristine and advanced location under Crane by an unmarked contractor in civilian clothes. Anderson was told by this guide, a private contractor, former military, and the same individual leading the weapons training course, quite nonchalantly, they were entering the quote-unquote off-world technologies division. Upon entering, Randy did not enter a normal firing range or laboratory. He and the other men entered what seemed to be a scientific observation room overseeing a laboratory housing two pieces of technology, staffed by one other contractor dressed similar to a lab technician. One device Randy witnessed was a sphere, no bigger than a basketball, that was seemingly constructed from seamless metal. The soldiers were told by their guide this object and the other piece of technology interacted with human consciousness. The other piece of technology was seemingly similar to a type of gauntlet that was, according to the contractor, considered weapon technology due to the tech producing an energetic discharge during recovery. This weapon was projecting some type of glyphic writing Randy could not distinguish between physical projection or projection into his mind. Shortly after, Randy was escorted out of the Off-World Technologies Division and to this day suffers extensive mental haze and memory problems surrounding this event. But where does SAIC tie into this? The mission of NSWC Crane is to provide the, quote, American warfighter with solutions to their toughest technical challenges to better equip a decisive advantage in electromagnetic warfare, strategic missions, and expeditionary warfare, end quote. Crane employs a whopping 2,489 contracting force and engages in projects with numerous defense contractors, DOE labs like Sandia National Labs, and universities. And also recall, as I just mentioned, earlier in this project, we have already discussed mention of SAIC and many contracts for the JTAA, the Joint Technology Assessment Activity, a key component of Crane that supports the Deputy Undersecretary of Defense Advanced Systems and Concepts. SAIC, one of the DoD's premier science and technology subject matter experts and innovative contractors, aka Washington Shadow, who has better access to the Pentagon than the government's own attorneys, has extensive contracts of interest with NSWC Crane, as well as a provable previous interest in consciousness-related studies, similar to the sphere Randy observed that purportedly only responded to human consciousness. Indeed, right around the time of Randy's encounter, 2012, the Office of Naval Research was seemingly carrying on the legacy of SAIC and Stargate, announcing a revolutionary research study that investigated sixth sense among humans to understand how to train personnel on, quote, intuitive decision-making, end quote. But like we've been doing in this video, let's follow the money and analyze some contracts. In my project on joint U.S. Navy undersea UFO retrieval programs, I highlighted joint programs operating between the U.S. Navy, the Office of Naval Research, the Office of Naval Intelligence, U.S. intelligence agencies such as NRO, NURO, NGA, CIA, as well as U.S. SOCOM, or Special Operations Command, defense contractors, and FFRDC such as the Center for Naval Analyses, MITRE, SAIC, Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute, and premier U.S. naval weapons facilities such as NSWC Crane and NSWC China Lake. In that project, which I highly recommend viewing, I discussed how Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute provided submersibles for undersea UFO crash retrievals for their, quote, unique capabilities that cannot be otherwise obtained, end quote. I theorize this work was conducted through sole source IDIQ and IDIC engineering service contracts between the National Defense Research and Development Services and Woods Hole awarded to Naval Surface Warfare Centers. Examples can be found between Woods Hole and Newark Keyport for the procurement of, quote, hardware, materials, and supplies, as well as services to develop, build, fabricate, integrate, evaluate, and support the unmanned undersea vehicle family of systems for the Naval Undersea Warfare Center, end quote. Indeed, Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute even has historical contracts with SAIC at NSWC Crane, such as this 24 May 2023 contract for, quote, research and development of expeditionary systems for Naval Sea Systems Command, Naval Surface Warfare Center Crane Weapons System Division, JXN, end quote. Crane's JXN, aka Weapon Systems Division, falls under NSWC Crane's JX, or Special Warfare and Expeditionary Systems Division. This is the department I previously suspected and still suspect holds the Off-World Technologies Division ran by SAIC. Curiously, there is a 2020 contract of interest here that was deleted from SAIC's website. This $133 million contract awarded to SAIC tasked the corporation to continue to provide mission engineering and integration services to the Maneuver, Engagement, and Surveillance Systems Division at NSWC Crane. The Maneuver, Surveillance, and Engagement Division, JXW, falls parallel to the Weapons Systems Division, JXN, that sees joint contracts between SAIC, Woods Hole, and Crane, both of which fall under the aforementioned Special Warfare and Expeditionary Systems Crane Division. In fact, analyzing this JXW division brings even more intrigue. Nestled within the Maneuver, Surveillance, and Engagement branch that sees enormous contracts with SAIC is a subset called JXWT. The Special Capabilities branch are elements of the Off-World Technologies Division hidden within Crane's Special Capabilities branch. This 2020 $133 million contract may seem obscene, but SAIC is no stranger to frankly enormous contracts. Earlier in this video, we discussed hundreds of millions of dollars awarded to SAIC for IT consolidation with Sandia National Laboratories. But how about this 2023 contract that also suspiciously vanished from SAIC's website around January of 2024, detailing a $249 million indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity SAIC contract to support Crane's Weapons Division instrumentation platform? These are but a handful of SAIC Crane contracts. Numerous more absolutely enormous contracts exist, such as a 2010 $351 million contract for SAIC to provide technical engineering services to NSWC Crane in support of the Joint Special Operations Response Department, which is referencing JSOC. And remember, we've discussed today, and as I do in almost every video, I link JSOC elements to UFO crash retrieval. Randy claimed the contractors associated with the classified Prosaic weapons training took him to the Off-World Technologies Division. Well, we can find even more examples of SAIC conducting weapons testing at Crane. In a now-restricted article that was comically pulled after my video on Randy Anderson, SAIC demonstrated extensive technical work providing expertise to improve C4ISR, aka Command, Control, Communications, Computers, Intelligence, Surveillance, and Reconnaissance and Weapon Systems for the Warfighter at NSWC Crane. So if Randy's story is true, is SAIC the contractor running the Off-World Technologies Division? Well, there is no direct proof, but I would wager there is ample evidence SAIC, with their demonstrated interest in psi phenomena, engagement with assets I have accused of participating in UFO retrieval operations at Crane, and proven history engaging in weapons training at Crane, single out SAIC as operating an underground laboratory focused on the housing, containment, and possible exploitation of non-human technology. What's going on, guys? It's UAP Gerb, and if you made it this far with me, I'd like to thank you from the bottom of my heart for joining me into this investigation into SAIC and UFO legacy programs. Now, before I do my end of video rant, let's get a couple things out of the way. Now, you probably see something new behind me. You probably noticed some new audio quality. I am trying as hard as I can to upgrade the studio, get a better mic, get better monitors, make the studio look a little nicer. Make it look a little bit better than the tarp I just got in the background. So I'll always be trying to upgrade. Anyways, as I said in the beginning of this video, I know for SAIC, we don't have as many direct connections to UFO programs, specifically craft housing and ARV production, than we do companies like Northrop, like we do Lockheed Martin, or even some of Northrop's subsidiaries, TRW, BDM, all the way back to aerospace, etc., and then FFRDCs like MITRE. But I hope what I showed today is that diving through SAIC's corporate history, some of their larger scandals, some of their implications in UFO programs, that this company has, for lack of a better term, quite a few skeletons in its closet. Whether this be defrauding the United States government and intelligence agencies or federal forces, like Virtual Case File with the FBI, or like Project Trailblazer with the NSA, SAIC seems to have a repeating pattern of securing enormous contracts and either delivering no product, under-delivering, or under-delivering and asking for more money. And as we saw from quotes throughout articles published by Forbes and published by Wall Street Journal in the early 2000s, there are numerous occasions on which there are anonymous or named whistleblower complaints against SAIC. And of course, we saw this with Denise McKenzie as well. And I was really interested to kind of connect Aldrich Saucier and his claims of fraud with the SDI, the Strategic Defense Initiative, and parallel that to 1992 as well with Denise McKenzie and SAIC. As we showed in this video, SAIC was pretty much the largest contractor for SDI for quite a few years, larger than other companies like Northrop Grumman, Lockheed Martin, and so forth combined. So by extension, I think it is safe to assume that some of this fraud and waste occurring in SDI would extend to its largest by an exponential factor contractor. Now with SAIC, probably what everybody thought going into this video was, of course, Randy Anderson, the Off-World Technologies Division, and Project Stargate. Now, I've said so many times, and my opinion has really changed on this matter, that some of the, for lack of a better term, psionics or psychic phenomena, plural, with UFO programs, whether that be cognitively interfacing with a craft in terms of Corso's claims and some of these beings flying UFOs via mind or via thoughts or headband transceivers and some of Leonard Stringfield's notes. I have really found solace in the quote by David Grush on JRE, where David Grush talks about Stargate and remote viewing documents in the CIA reading room and other various remote viewing programs, or AC or AP, some of those terms coined by SAIC. And I really found solace in Grush saying to Joe, when Joe kind of retorts back, well, of course the CIA would be looking to gain every single leverage into intelligence gathering, whether that be a legitimate source or not, that David Grush says, well, maybe some of these programs spawned out of a need to try and unlock something we have in a warehouse somewhere. I think that is an extremely interesting quote. And then that directly kind of corresponds to the story of Randy Anderson in the Off-World Technologies Division, where some of this sphere that he saw was claimed to interact with human consciousness, and how the contractors at NSWC Crane, which is most likely, and I still maintain, even stronger, is SAIC. And I also think it's interesting the larger SAIC connection to some of the larger naval air stations or naval surface warfare centers across the nation. I'm intrigued to really dive in more about Matt Brown's statements about Patuxent River and the Amentum hangars, and explore more of SAIC at Patuxent River, maybe NSWC Dahlgren, China Lake, etc., as well as their work with Amentum. Now, looking into the corporate of SAIC, I know it's quite convoluted, especially when we got into the decision science applications, and then that long road of DSAI going into DSA to Stephen Myers, to L3 Communications, to Engility, to being bought up by SAIC and L3 Harris. I know that's crazy complicated. I was really interested to find sort of similar to Triad National Security with Battelle and two universities that SAIC engaged in similar practices. And this was with their RDS with EG&G. Now, of course, the LLC went defunct within a couple years, but similar to Triad, this was a crack to break into DOE lab work and Department of Energy classified work. But I think one of the most tangible things we have from today's video, some of the most tangible research, is, of course, the SAIC whistleblowers. I do not need to say more about Dr. Sean Kirkpatrick. I'm sure by the time this video comes out, there will be a lot of stink about the Wall Street Journal article, and maybe even we'll get that part two soon. So I'd like to see more of basically a hero worship tale to Sean Kirkpatrick and his great work. But I'd also like to ask if Kona Blue was just a project tricking all Air Force personnel. What about the circular reporting? Those two seem at odds with each other from Kirkpatrick's claims. But anyway, I digress. I do believe we stumbled upon some other high-level SAIC gatekeepers and possibly individuals that need to be subpoenaed by Congress. Of course, most of these individuals are ceased, but some are still living. These gatekeeper individuals include John M. Deutsch, William J. Perry, Admiral Rayburn, Admiral Owens, and Donald Kerr. I'd say of all of these individuals, Donald Kerr's CV has the greatest CV and greatest work history that would lend to UFO legacy programs, this being CIA, DS&T, SAIC, NRO, the MITRE Corporation, etc. I'd be real interested to hear from more about Don Kerr's work in legacy program operations. And gosh, I'd be really interested to speak to Oki Shannon as well. Of course, we saw in the ATP notes from 85, we see look to Don Kerr for influence and money. And earlier in those notes, I didn't include this in the video, there's Don K slash dash ET with a couple other names. Now, is this Don Kerr? Most likely. And why ET? Was there other information spoken about Don Kerr at this advanced theoretical physics working group at BDM's facility in McLean, Virginia, that was held 1 year after Stubblebine joined BDM? I would certainly like to know more. And also, I know I said earlier in the video that I have found Denise McKenzie and attempted to make contact. I've heard nothing yet. I'd really like to speak to her to learn more. I've also found Mr. Stuart Stanley and I've tried to reach out to him. Nothing yet either. So, kind of the running theme with this video, and as we said in the beginning, SAIC has really seemed to stay in the shadows. Why that is? I think they've really maintained a lower profile than companies like Northrop Grumman and Lockheed Martin, and maintained a lower profile than even some of the other low-profile guys like MITRE, like CNA, like RAND, etc. So I hope, if anything, this video just brings to light some of the involvement of SAIC in not only just UFO legacy programs, but also black budget operations and some secretive work. I mean, SAIC, from its inception, being staffed with high-level individuals such as Bobby Ray Inman, has had numerous high-level intelligence and military individuals. The way this has been explained to me in the past is some individuals who work in UFO legacy programs within the DoD or IC, they'll trade in their stripes and stars for a pinstripe suit. And essentially, these guys will go from working on UFO legacy programs within official United States government and DoD avenues and intelligence avenues to doing the same thing on a corporate payroll. And you'd imagine with a lot of these gatekeepers we talked about, Sean Kirkpatrick included, a lot of these guys would either go on to work at SAIC after service in the US DoD or IC, or before worked in SAIC. This reminds me of John Deutsch, who before he joined as DepSecDef and spearheaded SAPOC SRG and SAPOC itself, he was already on the board of SAIC and already working with TRW. And how about that? I know in the Northrop video, we talked quite a bit about TRW. TRW was, of course, purchased by Lockheed Martin in the early 2000s. And another connection to the Wilson-Davis notes, TRW had also been kind of convicted and pursued legally for overcharging on space systems, on space projects by the US DoD in the early 90s. And in that Northrop project, I kind of tied that together with some of the near auditing that almost found out some of the DoD UAP legacy programs. So that's interesting as well, that so many of these individuals also have connections to TRW. Of course, with TRW, you have the old Zodiac story and so forth by pseudonym Sedge Masters. Richard Dolan's done some incredible work on that. I'd love to work with him someday to revisit Zodiac. But I'll leave my rant there. I do hope, again, that this is a springboard for more research into SAIC UFO legacy programs. I would like to hear more stories of ARV and SAIC tied together, and I would like to hear more material exploitation programs and craft housing. But guys, I'm going to say this in the end of my videos every time. If you are an individual who has had experience firsthand or have secondhand knowledge on UFO legacy programs, this be crash retrieval or material exploitation, please email me at uapgerb@protonmail.com. I've switched away from a Gmail account. I've had some wise advice that this wouldn't necessarily be a secure method to receive such communication. So uapgerb@protonmail.com. And guys, please remember to like and subscribe. Every like, every subscription, every view, every comment helps tremendously. And like I say in every single video, I do have a Patreon. I don't gatekeep content. There's nothing special on there that you won't get for free here, but I say that to support the channel for what you think it's worth. But again, no content gate kept there. A lot of exciting projects coming up. Maybe one interview I'm going to do that I would really, really like to do, but this is just the first project in a long list of many new projects with the revitalized setup, with continued attempts to get better at recording, editing, and so forth. So we'll always put my best foot forward for you guys. Again, remember to like and subscribe. Join the Patreon if you think it's this channel's worth anything. And if you have any direct knowledge, uapgerb@protonmail.com. With that, guys, I will catch everybody on the next episode. And thank you so much for watching. Peace, everybody.